Hi, Woody. My name's Michael. I am an addict. Thank you, Secretary, for the meeting and everybody doing service, along with Shireen, who invited me to the meeting to listen to Kelly. And now I'm sharing. So it's sort of meant to be, I think. My normal Friday meeting, funny enough, went back face to face and it's slightly too far away from me. So Fridays, I've sort of begun my free evening to do what I want. So it's nice to be in a meeting, and it's nice to have a different format and nice to see different faces. I'm going to start on something that I have a lot of notes on my phone, and I wrote a note. I was writing a note in the lead up to my decision to go to rehab. So last May, I split up with a partner, and it was a third time in a row of the same cycle of meeting somebody and then it breaking up and then meeting somebody again and breaking up. But on the 25th of May, I really was just at my wit's end, and I wrote down what I want my future to be. It says cocaine free, full control of every element of my life and the decisions I make, and be able to live a true life. At that point, I had no idea what NA was about. I'd never picked up a big book. I'd never known, and I think I vaguely knew what the steps were in another fellowship. But that was the start of my journey. I went into treatment on the 13th. So 13 months ago, I went into treatment. So I'm 13 months clean as of today, which, given the state of me last July, is a complete turnaround and a complete miracle. Today, I am able to wake up with a regulated washing machine rather than a one that's about to explode and fly off the handle. I was very tightly wound, even though I thought I was very relaxed and in control of things. I was the complete opposite. And it's really interesting speaking to people who I've known, family members, and close friends, to see really the change that they're seeing in me. And it's not quite frightening, but it's quite disconcerting to hear how people saw you and perceived you. Attitude, emotionally unavailable, not really wanting to engage, becoming more and more isolated, taking myself away early from some family engagements or not going to them at all, not really wanting to be a part of society, so to speak. The first thing I read earlier, it was got to the point where I'd realised that actually the only thing that was stopping me from having the life I wanted was the big fat issue of my cocaine addiction, which was sitting in front of me. I'd managed to change everything else. It was changing jobs, changing, moving with somebody, move out with somebody, moving with somebody else, go on holiday. There's always something. But it's the consistent thing for me. I finally realised that it was me, and that if I needed to make a better life for myself, I had to make a change. I didn't feel I had the strength at that point in time, last May, to really do it on my own. So I took steps to get myself treatment. So I took 3 months in lockdown. I thought, well, everybody else is in lockdown. I might as well be locked all the way in a rehab, to be honest. That was really my viewpoint, because I had a fear of missing out. I always wanted to be the last man standing, which I usually was. I was always the one that wanted to stay out longer than anybody else. And a lot of people tried to keep up, and it basically was just me in the end. So I just needed to really have a complete reset of me. Take me, everything was a trigger. Cash points were a trigger, where I walked the dog was a trigger, the corner shop was a trigger. So I wasn't going to be able to, I knew I didn't have the strength to do that on my own. So treatment really gave me that clean break. But that's where I got introduced to NA. I was brought up as a Jehovah's Witness. So going into my first meeting and hearing a lot about God and a lot about praying, it was really like, it was just, it sort of started to grate, and it's as treatment does, it brings up lots from my past, brought up lots from my past. So there's a lot going on, things I had to remedy with my family, things I had to remedy with my mum had passed, things I had to remedy with the religion I grew up in, things I had to remedy about my sexuality, everything. So it was a very intense 3 months. But gradually, through going to the meetings and sitting on those Zoom meetings, because I didn't do my first meeting until this year. I would say my first meeting was this year sometime, maybe in June. So I only got to meet people in NA via Zoom. And for me, it was a godsend. So I was able to hear and my ears were open. And within the first week, understanding that I would never have been able to do this on my own. I think somebody said it's a WE program. And that I had to go to treatment. I had to see that, you know what, there's all these other recovering addicts sitting around me, 16, 17, 20 at one point, that they've all tried to do it on their own and they haven't been able to. It's brilliant because I feel such a relief because I was literally trying, I was killing myself trying to stop because I was stopping and then I was like, I can't do this and I just would give up. So it'd just be a constant cycle. So to have that relief and to realise and to hear people of all shapes and sizes, all backgrounds, all creeds, and all realising that they couldn't have given up or they can't give up without the help of Narcotics Anonymous or this programme. So slowly I was able to start putting these little building blocks back around me, discover who I was. I walked into rehab in Bournemouth and I don't know who I was at all. I really don't. What do I like? What do I don't like? Who do I like, who I don't like? I wanted everybody to like me. I was very wrapped up in what had materialistically. I'd always liked nice things. I just thought that was me. But it was all about presenting something. It was all about presenting myself to certain groups of people. I had to hide my sexuality for a long time from my parents. I had to hide it from the religion. I had to hide it from school friends. So really my becoming I had to lie from a very early age. So being really, really good at lying, really good at sort of bringing together a look to make sure that I fitted in with certain types of people. Or I was about 12 years old, I was nearly 6 foot, very skinny, and I went to an all black school. So I was literally sticking out like a sore thumb. So I was doing everything to make myself look smaller and to fade into the background. But inside, I wanted screaming for attention. But inside, I was holding on to sort of the different versions of me. And it was just, I didn't realise how many versions of me I had inside me when I went to treatment and to really break down and to see how I'd actually just melded to make me acceptable to you in the situation that you want, that I'm in with you. Whether that's taking drugs, whether that's staying up late, whether that's going to see a movie I don't really want to do. It was just people-pleasing. And it was a real eye-opener because I was doing things that I didn't want to do. Good things, bad things, vile things, outrageous things, risky things. But I didn't really think about it. There was no thought about it. I could do it. And having an upbringing where I was quite restricted in what I could do, everything became major. I was just taking major risks, doing major things. It wasn't like a 1 week holiday, it was a 3 week holiday. It wasn't like a one night out, it was like a 5 night out. It wasn't a birthday, it was a 2 week birthday. So it was just going to the extreme. And I thought that's what life was about, because I'd never lived that type of life. But realizing actually that is an abnormal way of life, and I could not maintain. I just wanted to be having fun all the time. I had a very successful job, enabled me to do a lot of really great things. But I have to give. And this program has given me the ability to realise that actually life isn't always going to be like in the clouds, and life isn't always going to be dark and in depression. It's going to be a mixture of both. But the program has enabled me to see and actually deal with those things and actually take responsibility. I thought I was responsible because I had staff of 30 and a budget for a shop was just in a couple of million. That's why I thought I had responsibility, and I thought I'd I had responsibility, but actually I wasn't paying my bills. I was racking up debt. I couldn't really speak to my father properly. We'd regress to a father-son relationship and it would end up in arguments. Me and my brother were really scratchy together. And I realised, actually, I hadn't grown up. I hadn't grown up at all. And I was just riding this, like, constant wave of fun and frivolous activity. And it just came crashing down back in a couple of years ago. And in treatment, and the program has just been able to show me that actually life is tough and I have to take responsibility for those tough things and then good things happen. Today I have the opportunity to work with my father. He's a builder. I don't particularly like it. I was forced to do it when I was a child. But you know what? I'm doing it because it's helping our relationship. We're getting something out of it together. What did it cost me? Nothing. What does it give me? It gives me a relationship with my father that was not necessarily there before. He could be the same woman as me, but I couldn't be the same woman as him. Everything wasted on me. Huge resentments. And through the treatment, through the program, near just over a year, those are melting away, and they're not melting away and disappearing. I'm just able to process them and realize, see my part in them. But that's the beauty of the steps. It's everything was somebody else's fault for me. Well, they sacked me because they're just stupid and they don't understand what I'm doing and how amazing I am at this job. It's always somebody else's fault. But when I've looked at those situations, actually, I was just too big-headed and proud to actually say, actually, I've made a mistake here. This is why I'm being sacked, or this is why I'm being let go. And same with my dad. I always thought that he was never around, and my mum was always around, which was fantastic, but didn't really breed a good relationship with me and my dad. But if my dad hadn't gone out to work, I wouldn't have been able to have that relationship with my mother and the times I had with my mother financially or just the social aspects. So I've been able to see that actually other perspectives, I'm not the only person in the room and I don't have to be the last person standing. I can leave first and nobody's talking about me because they're probably too busy talking about themselves. And I was full of fear what people were thinking. The thought of doing something like this off the cuff, even I'd say 9 months ago, would have filled me with fear. And it's good sometimes when the fear is dissipated, and sometimes it's a lot stronger. But I realised that I've definitely spent most of my life in fear, whether it's fear of something happening or fear what people thought of me, the fear of people finding out, people fear of that. And what's that complex called in high-powered jobs? Yes. It'll come to me in a minute. Fear of being found out that actually you're not that good at your job, and why are you in that job, and you should actually be demoted, or you should actually be put in a different department. I'm gradually building that inner confidence. And it's a full sense of security I've learned is that I think people view me as really confident, but then on the flip side, low self-esteem, and there's this horrible double-edged, this double-sided coin that people are, oh my God, what do you mean you're insecure or you've got self-esteem? But again, it's that mask that I've worn, and it's pretend everything's okay. And that was my downfall, pretending everything was okay, pushing it down. It'll be okay. I don't care what they think. And the resentments sort of layer up and layer up. And now I can be me now, and the me you're seeing now is the me you'll get tomorrow morning, the me you'll get tomorrow afternoon, the me you get to next week. And the beauty of this is that I came out of treatment not knowing what I was going to do with my, well, not what got to the end of my life, what was going to happen with family, with relationships. And by just working the program has been enough for people to say, wow, this is a different version of you. It's a better version. It's the truer version that we knew sort of way back when you were 20. For my dad to say, I now believe everything that comes out of your mouth, without any sort of courting that comment or asking for it or trying to show that I'm doing better, it just came naturally over coffee. And I'm like, and that just made me think that obviously he does care, but he just didn't know what to believe. And to think that a father of their son couldn't believe what I was saying, no matter what it was, he said, but now he does. And I commit, I'm where I'm meant to be, I do what my sponsor says. I've had him since treatment and never met him, only on Zoom. And we've just been able to have these discussions about my past, the things I've done, the relationships I've got now, the relationships that I haven't got, and really just to be completely transparent. And it's so so refreshing, so relieving, and I can feel myself relaxing sort of every time we speak and as the weeks go by. And things which used to really affect me, suddenly I was in treatment with somebody and they've relapsed and gone back out there. Wouldn't say we've gone through a lot, but I've known him for over a year, and it's sad. But, and that person has tried to cut contact from me completely. And it really hurts. And it really, really, really cuts deep. A year ago, it would have just completely rocked my world. It was me. It's what have I done? What have I said? And I have to now speaking to my sponsor, and I really feel that, you know what? I know I haven't done anything. They just need to do what they need to do. And if it's meant to be, they'll come back. And it's just great to be able to not go to bed worrying about those sort of things or worry about where I'm going to live. Where there was a point where I didn't know where I was going to live and things materialised, similar to what Kelly said before. And it's this programme. And that's all I can say. It's the gratitude for this programme I have is immense. The people in it, the connections I've made, the people I've been able to support, the people that supported me. If I hadn't have been dumped last May, I definitely wouldn't have been sitting here. The person who started with me, I've thanked many times. I said, because if you hadn't have got rid of me, I would never have broken up, and I would never have had that desperation moment that I talked about at the beginning and written the list of things that I want to do with my life and to change it. That would never have happened. But also, coming into Bournemouth, into that treatment centre, I would never have been introduced to NA. Then I would never have met my sponsor, and therefore I'd never have been into these rooms, and therefore I would never have met some of the people that I really care for on this screen. And also I would never have met these new people that I've met on this screen. So I have a lot of gratitude today. It's not always easy. Coming to meetings for me is you get some things, you don't get some things. You gel with people, you don't gel with people. And you know what, that's okay. But the thing is, I have to just keep coming back every meeting. And even if it is a bit grating or I've had a bad day, for me, that's an indication that I need to go to a meeting. Yes, I don't know how much time I've got left. So I've got 5 minutes left. So we're working, been working through some steps or past and some resentments. For me, honesty, I thought I was an honest person. For me now, honesty is like the backbone to my program. The amount of lies that I took, the amount of deceit, the amount of fraud that I did, the amount of just money I conned out of people. And my therapist said to me, I describe myself as charming in one of my diary entries. She was like, charming is the children, manipulation is adults. So I was a very good manipulator. I could get things out of people and just lie. And now I cannot lie for the sake. I can't, it just doesn't happen. I get very uneasy. It's keeping secrets and and having an edge or an angle, that's what my addict wants. As soon as I have that angle and I'm keeping something to myself that's not shared with anybody else, it's what my addict wants. It likes me being secretive. My addiction was a secretive addiction. It had me in my bedroom. It didn't want me with anybody else. It only wanted me with people that wanted to take drugs with me. And it wanted me to go down a path of deviant and just wrong behavior. And I don't want to go back there. And if it means I don't have to, if it means I can't lie, then I'm happy with that. If it means I have to come to meetings, I'm happy with that. If it means I have to sit in a meeting and listen to people talk about the same subjects, which does happen and it can be frustrating, so be it. I just can't go back to having my bedroom door shut with the blinds down, thinking I'm going to be attacked or having a home invasion or my dog's going to be stolen. And it sounds really funny now when I say it, but I was literally, I didn't know what psychosis was. And when I went into treatment, she said, "Do you suffer from psychosis?" I just said, "Yes." I said, "You know what it, I actually didn't know what it was." Then I actually realized that sitting in a bedroom looking through a slatted window, thinking my boyfriend is actually in a car with somebody else opposite, and looking at that BMW window for so long, that's psychosis. I realized I did have it. And he wasn't in the car. So, yes, I'm going to leave it on that. And anybody's new, welcome. As always said, there's loads of meetings and there's loads of people to connect to. Make sure you connect. Thank you very much.